Nagorno-Karabakh's breakaway government announces its dissolution as over half of the enclave's population moved to Armenia following Azerbaijan's offensive. And leading economic institutes warn that the recession in Europe's largest economy, Germany, this year will be worse than previously feared. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran's president has hailed the successful launch of new satellite into orbit, despite sanctions imposed by Western states aimed at crippling the Islamic Republic space program. Raisi said the launch has once again proven that threats and sanctions have no effect on Iran's determination to progress. He also thanked organizations and people involved in the satellite launch while urging them to pave the way for the country's rapid growth in the space industry. On Wednesday, the Aerospace Division of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps blasted off Noor 3 imaging satellite aboard a carrier dubbed Asedor Messenger. It was placed into orbit 450 kilometers above the Earth's surface. The IRGC had successfully launched the homegrown Noor 1 and Noor 2 satellites in 2020 and 2022, respectively. Iran's Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf says the current international order needs to undergo a thorough review, as it is not working effectively.
The whole world expects the international order to serve the nation's welfare and ease tensions on the global level. It's also expected that such an order helps support the environment, settle the water crisis, provide enough food, boost people's purchasing power, use technology efficiently and ethically, fight terrorism, and promote moral principles. I'm sorry to say that this is not the case now.
He made the remarks at the 9th BRICS Parliamentary Forum in Johannesburg, South Africa, on Wednesday. He said several Western states have turned the United Nations into an organization controlled by certain governments, causing international problems to pile up. He said the global economy is also largely controlled by Western powers, and they increasingly use this power as leverage against other countries. Ghalibaf praised BRICS as the prime example of collective efforts to make the world a better place filled with justice. Ghalibaf said the idea of de-dollarization of the global economy is beneficial to the developing nations. He also said the world needs geopolitical initiatives, offering peaceful solutions to international conflicts. Iran has urged the international community to condemn the recent nuclear threat by Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu against the Islamic Republic. Iran says the regime's threat to use nuclear weapons undermines international peace and security. Netanyahu, in his address to the United Nations General Assembly, called for a, quote, credible nuclear threat against Iran.
Iran has vowed a resolute response to Israel after the regime's prime minister threatened to use nuclear weapons against the Islamic Republic. Amir Saeed Iravani said Israel's threat to use nuclear weapons is a serious threat to international peace and security, and the international community must not remain indifferent or silent. The Iranian envoy urged the United Nations Security Council to denounce Israel's reckless statement. Iran's deputy permanent representative to the United Nations has also denounced Israel's nuclear threat against the country. Zahra Ershadi has called on the international community to force the regime to abandon nuclear weapons, join the NPT, and accept the IAEA safeguard system.
The Israeli regime, with the support of the United States, has consistently opposed all initiatives aimed at establishing a nuclear weapon-free zone in the Middle East. The possession of hundreds of nuclear weapons by this regime poses a severe threat to the security of the Middle East and beyond. A vivid example of this regime's outlawed action is calling for a so-called, I quote, credible nuclear threat against Iran, end of quote, which was brazenly raised by the regime's prime minister on 22nd September 2023.
Ershadi slammed Tel Aviv's irresponsible threat, which he said was against international norms and rules. Days earlier, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had addressed the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly, calling for a credible nuclear threat against Iran.
Sanctions must be snapped back. And above all, Iran must face a credible nuclear threat.
His office soon afterwards said that Netanyahu had misspoken and that his prepared text said credible military threat. Iran says the international community should reject and condemn any normalization of nuclear rhetoric and, in particular, the threat of use of nuclear weapons.
Israel, which pursues a policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear weapons, is estimated to harbor around 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the sole possessor of non-conventional arms in West Asia. Iran has repeatedly called on the international community to press Israel to come clean on its military nuclear program. Tehran has time and again declared that its nuclear program remains purely peaceful.
Israel has a widely known but undeclared nuclear program. According to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, as of January, Israel was believed to possess a stockpile of around 90 nuclear warheads. But analysts believe the regime possesses 200 to 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal, making it the Middle East's sole possessor of non-conventional arms. The Tel Aviv regime has, however, refused to either allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, or the NPT. On the contrary, Iran has long been cooperating with the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, as a signatory to the NPT. Tehran has repeatedly declared that its nuclear program remains purely peaceful as always, and that the Islamic Republic had no intention of developing nuclear weapons as a matter of Islamic and state principles. Iran proved the peaceful nature of its nuclear program to the world by signing the 2015 Iran nuclear deal, officially called the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, with six world powers, but the United States later quit it. Ever since the Islamic Republic of Iran decided to restart its nuclear activities after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, it has faced consistent threats from Western nations and their regional allies, especially Israel. The Tel Aviv regime has launched sabotage attacks against Iran's nuclear facilities and assassinated its nuclear scientists. Several Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2020. Israel has pressed upon its allies that Iran's program is malicious, partly as a smokescreen for its own nuclear program and its scores of undeclared nuclear warheads.
What I call in English whistleblower, to inform the world about Israel's nuclear secret, because no one speak or no one report exactly what's going there.
In 1986, Vanunu duped Israel's vaunted security apparatus and smuggled a camera into the secret Dimona plant. His photographs exposed the world's greatest nuclear cover-up. What he showed was that Israel's nuclear arms program was far bigger and much more powerful than anyone had even dreamt possible.
Enough material every year for 10 bombs.
Netanyahu, Israel's longest-serving prime minister, has campaigned against Iran for almost 30 years. Israel has always turned a deaf ear to international calls on nuclear transparency, and it has never allowed any inspections of its nuclear facilities.
The government of Nagorno-Karabakh has announced the disputed self-proclaimed state will formally become part of Azerbaijan by the end of the year. The leader of the territory issued the dissolution decree after it became clear over half of the state's population had fled to neighboring Armenia. The exodus was prompted by a brief military operation by Azerbaijan last week to take full control of Nagorno-Karabakh. Armenia's prime minister has accused Baku of conducting, quote, ethnic cleansing. Baku rejected the claim, saying it only wants to reintegrate the ethnic Armenian community into Azerbaijan. A Russian broker truce has ended Baku's military operation. Local armed groups have pledged to disarm and enter reintegration talks. Nagorno-Karabakh is an internationally recognized part of Azerbaijan, but is largely populated by ethnic Armenians. Armenia and Azerbaijan have fought two wars over the territory, in which tens of thousands of people have died. Well, the bad news just keeps coming for Europe's largest economy, Germany. Some leading research institutes have warned that the recession in the country this year will be worse than previously feared. In their joint forecast, the institutes said the German economy will shrink 0.6% in 2023. The projection came from bodies including the IFO Institute and the Halle Institute for Economic Research, which cited slow industrial production and private consumption. German policymakers face challenges on multiple fronts, including inflation, weakness in manufacturing, and the impact of record Eurozone interest rates. Spain is also dealing with similar economic woes amid skyrocketing inflation, mainly due to higher electricity and fuel prices. Official figures this month showed that consumer prices rose 3.5% year-on-year, about 1% higher than August. German journalist and author Christoph Horstel says the figures published by economic institutions don't fully depict Germany's current state of the economy.
The inflation is only a follow-up to the higher energy prices, and that is what our media keeps silent about due to political reasons. So in fact, to speak correctly to you, they are lying, these media. So what is the main branch, or what are the parts of the economy which are most hit? Of course, those parts which are dependent on energy prices. The higher the dependence, of course, the higher the pressure, in fact, to escape from Germany. And that's what we have. Just yesterday, I talked to the head of a consulting company, which is consulting with small and medium-sized economic issues, companies. And they tell them, leave Germany. This is it. They are fleeing from Germany. And that situation is not pointed out in the figures we hear. And I think the figures are false. And what the institutions, who are all full of, you know, Washington compliant figures, people, executives, it is very clear that these people also don't speak the truth. Germany is going down rapidly, and the figures don't show that.
The British and French defense ministers are in the Ukrainian capital to discuss further military assistance, despite Russia's warnings against arms deliveries to Ukraine. Their visits came ahead of Kiev's first defense industries forum, where Ukrainian officials are set to meet representatives from 26 countries. British Defense Secretary Grant Shapps promised further military support to Ukraine in his meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky. The French Defense Minister, Sébastien Lecornu, also held similar discussions. Both countries have supplied Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles that can strike deep within Russian soil. The NATO chief, Jens Stoltenberg, is also in Kiev as Zelensky seeks more Western support for Ukraine's counteroffensive against Russian forces.
We discussed the possibility of supplying what we really need, the supply of air defense by the member states of the alliance. The Secretary General has agreed to exert his efforts to help and support us in this matter, to mobilize the member states of the alliance for this very purpose.
Stoltenberg, for his part, said NATO has secured over $2.5 billion for key ammunition for Ukraine. It will cover weapons such as anti-tank guided missiles and 155-millimeter artillery. The U.S. and its Western allies have pumped tens of billions of dollars in military aid into Ukraine since the start of the war in February 2022. Moscow has time and again warned the military assistance will only prolong the war, citing NATO's eastward expansion as a reason for its military operation against Ukraine. On to the U.S., where the main auto workers union might announce an expansion of its historic strike against the top three car manufacturers if there is no progress in talks over a new labor contract. U.S. media reports say the union will announce new targets for the strike on Friday if it concludes that it has not made enough progress. Its members will join the strike at noon Friday. The union went on a strike against General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis on September 15. It was the first time that it ever struck all three automakers at the same time, but it struck only one assembly plant for each company at that time. Hundreds of thousands of U.S. workers in various industries walked off the job this year, from Hollywood screenwriters and actors to nurses, hotel staff, and pilots. Experts blame rising income inequality especially amid soaring prices in the current flagging U.S. economy, among other reasons. Speaking at a meeting of the DPRK's parliament, Leader Kim Jong-un emphasized ongoing nuclear development in the face of the worst threat posed by the U.S. and its regional allies, South Korea and Japan. Pyongyang's representative to the U.N. had also recently remarked on the growing nuclear threat to the U.S. and which it poses to the region at the UNGA. This comes with South Korea holding its first military parade in a decade, demonstrating the heightened military tension in the region. Hangzhou is taking center stage as it hosts the 19th Asian Games in China. Iran has sent 289 athletes who have grabbed 22 medals, including 3 gold so far. And that does it for World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Hidden Files.
Well, there's a distinct and qualitative difference between one breaking a law for one's own individual self-interest or violating it in the interests of a class or a people whose oppression is expressed either directly are indirectly through that particular law. Well, the former might be called a criminal, though in many instances he is a victim. But the latter, as a reformist or revolutionary, is interested in universal social change. Captured, he or she is a political prisoner. Well, this is an excerpt from writings by former political prisoner, black revolutionary activist and professor, Dr. Angela Davis. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Well, you heard the definition of who is a political prisoner, according to this philosopher and activist. But the United States denies ever having any political prisoners. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of individuals who've been incarcerated in the U.S. over the decades. who would say otherwise. Now, some of them have now died in prison. Some have been released, and others are still incarcerated after being in prison for more than 4 decades. Now, many of these individuals were involved in revolutionary movements in the 1960s. At the time, most of the activists were teenagers or in their 20s. Imagine that. Now, they say that they were fighting against settler colonialism and oppression. Now, these individuals are elderly in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s. They have endured many decades in prison and have spent much of their time even in solitary confinement. Many of them are ill, and lawyers have petitioned for them to be released on the basis of compassion. However, the U.S. is still adamant about keeping them behind bars. Why?
Why American authorities felt that the Black Panthers were such a threat, and the reason why the U.S. destroyed this group and many other Black nationalist groups. What exactly were they demanding? They wanted freedom and the power to determine the destiny of Black and oppressed communities. The group believed that self-determination was key to ending their oppression, and they wanted to control the institutions in their communities. The Black Panthers were also seeking full employment for African Americans and other people of color. Due to the fact that Black communities had been exploited for hundreds of years, the group wanted an end to the theft by the capitalist system of Black people. They believed that the U.S. government was racist and prevented Black Americans from excelling. They demanded what was promised to them after slavery, and that was 40 acres of land and 2 mules, or the financial equivalent of it. The Black Panthers wanted decent housing for Black people and other minorities, housing which was fit to live in. And the group was also demanding that decent education be provided to Black Americans. They wanted what they called true history to be taught, which meant exposing the true nature of American imperialism, as well as teaching the reality of how Black Americans had been exploited and how they contributed to society. The Black Panthers were looking at many aspects of life, including health, and they wanted free health care for all Black and oppressed people. And they wanted preventive medicine to be practiced in oppressed communities. One of the first demands of the Black Panthers was an end to police brutality and the murder of Black people and other oppressed people inside the United States. The Black Panthers were very aware of the connection between their own oppression and the oppression of others. Thus, they wanted an end to all wars of aggression by the United States. They said the goal of these wars was to expand domination and the oppression of people around the world. The organizations wanted the freedom for all Black and oppressed people being held in all U.S. prisons. The Panthers felt that to begin with, their incarceration was due to the racist and oppressive system. And they also believed that any trials held for alleged crimes should be done so in front of a jury of peers. To sum it up, what the Black Panthers wanted for their people and others were land, bread, housing, education, clothing, justice, peace, and people's community control of modern technology. Had these demands been met, it would have ensured the liberation, independence, and advancement of the Black community in the United States. However, the imperialist capitalist system is not designed to liberate the oppressed, but to gain the ultimate benefit from their oppression.
Well, I would like to welcome a former U.S. political prisoner to Hidden Files, who was incarcerated for 49 years.
Jalil Montarem, former member of the Black Panthers Party, which he joined at 16, and founding member of the Jericho Movement for Political Prisoners. He was incarcerated at age 19, and he was freed at age 69. He spent almost 15 years in prison. He was released in October of 2020. Jalil Montarem established the first revolutionary newspaper from prison and continues to be active. He started from inside prison, a national campaign to recognize political prisoners. He also started a UN petition against the U.S. having political prisoners.
Well, thank you for joining us here at Hidden Files, Mr. Montarim. How do you define a political prisoner?
How do we create these categories and define who they are as a result of their resistance of being dissenters to a system of white supremacy and capitalist imperialism? For us, our comrades are freedom fighters, right? They identify them as being terrorists. Why are they terrorists? Because they're opposing the ideals and the practices of white supremacy and capitalist imperialism. Right? They are trying to alleviate our oppression, right, by any means necessary, as El Hajj Malik Shabazz has instructed us, by any means necessary. And so therefore they criminalize us, right, and bring us to criminal court in order to charge us what they call criminal offenses, right, on their books, right, in order to protect their interests, protect the state, right? And so this is the reason why they don't want to identify us as political prisoners, because they criminalize our movement. They criminalize our people. They criminalize our movement, right? We've been engaging in war against black people since 1619, all right, if you really want to understand it, all right? When they had the black codes, they had Jim Crow, right? And they have mass incarceration, right? The school-to-prison pipeline, right? It's all criminalizing our lives, right? Our efforts to be actually totally free and emancipated, right, people. And so that is the reason why they criminalize us, don't want to give us recognition, right, and understanding that there is divisions in this country, right, as a result of white supremacy, capitalist imperialism, past and race divisions in this country, and that there are people grappling with this idea that at some point in time, we have to free ourselves from a system that has been oppressing us for the last 400 years.
Well, from your experience, do you think that political prisoners are treated differently than the average prisoner?
We find that political prisoners are naturally distinguished from the regular general prison population. And the reason why is because they're educated. They're educated and they understand the nature of their relationship to the state. And therefore, they try to remove those individuals from the population because they do not want the general population to be educated and understand what is the relationship to the state in regards to being an antagonistic relationship they have with the state, particularly based upon race and class. And so for me, naturally, being an organizer in prison, I haven't been organized outside prison, been organized inside prison. I often was targeted by prison officials to be put in solitary confinement and or have other types of harassments and being deprived of certain privileges that most prisoners get. They would deprive me of that. But the only thing that did make me stronger, made me fight harder. That's all.
Well, do you think that it has been proven to the international community that political prisoners exist in the U.S., though Washington denies it?
Excellent question. You are absolutely correct. The United States does not recognize the fact that they do have political prisoners. When I first put in my, I'll give you an example. When I first submitted my campaign, U.S. Petition campaign to the United Nations, this was back in the late 1970s, early 1980s, I had the opportunity to have a question asked of then UN ambassador to the United Nations by a guy named by the name of Andrew Young, the first black UN ambassador to the United Nations under the presidency of Jimmy Carter. And the question I had asked him by a journalist who was, when he was in Paris having a press conference, was, does political prisoners exist in the United States? And Andrew Young answered in the affirmative, positively, said perhaps thousands. You can Google New York Times, Andrew Young, political prisoners, and all those articles will come up. He was vilified in the press, vilified by the elite for having made that truthful statement and passed 1,000 political prisoners in the United States. And he was called to the carpet in the White House and told him to shut that down. Why do they do that? They do that because they don't want the world to know that there is dissent in the United States, right? They project themselves as being the moral of humanitarian leader of the world, and that is a false. That's a falsehood, right? They are the greatest harbinger of and progeny of violence in the world. Not my words; those are the words of Dr. Martin Luther King prior to his being assassinated. He said the United States is the greatest progenitor of violence in the world, and we understand that. We know that.
Well, do you see a connection between the oppression of black Americans and the oppression of people worldwide?
One of the things I told the community, international community, that their freedom depends mostly on our freedom, right? Black people's freedom in the United States, right? I informed them specifically that when we are free, you will be free, right? Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because we are in the bastion of white supremacy, you see? And so for us, if this empire, we call the United States, which is in fact is an empire, right? Well, an octopus, right? You can see the tentacles all over the world, right? Where they're sucking the blood and sucking the resources and sucking the labor from various, particularly mostly people of color countries around the world, right? Now, those who engage in struggles for national liberation and independence to end colonialism, neocolonialism, oftentimes they'll cut off the tentacles, right, of the octopus, right? They freeing themselves. But what happens? The tentacles grow back, right? At a period of time, the tentacles grow back, like what happened in Chile and Salvador Allende, right? Mm-hmm. As an example, when Pinochet took over after they freed themselves. And the same thing happened in various other parts of the world. Why is that? Because the head has not been dealt with. The head of the octopus, right? We are in the head of the octopus, okay? So therefore, as long as the head of the octopus maintains itself, right, then they continue to create the conditions for which they can reassert themselves in those struggles, in those moves that were successful at some point in time. All right, so for us, it is imperative that the world know, that the international community, progressive international community, understands that what they're dealing with around the world is white supremacy, capitalist imperialism, but we're in the bastion. We're in the heart of it, right? We're in the belly of the beast. And therefore, our struggle, ultimately, when we are successful, inshallah, when we are successful, the world will also be free.
Well, fortunately, you are no longer in prison, but can you tell us more about the overall conditions of these prisoners even as we speak?
Imam Jamil Al-Amin, right, who they know is innocent of the crime that he committed, but because of his history of resistance, they had to lock him in the prison system. And he's been in ever since, almost 22 years now, right? They know he's innocent. The guy who committed the crime for which he was convicted of confessed, all right? But they hold him in prison because of his politics or who he is as a political person. Another individual is Varon Zambaro, right? This individual was part of Black Liberation Army, part of the movement back in the days. He did his time, was on his way out the front door, had gotten parole, had received parole on his way out the front door. And Anthony Gonzalez, who was Attorney General of the United States at the time, called the prison and told them, don't release him. He's still in prison today, right, because of his politics. Not because of anything else he's done on. He did his time. He guaranteed parole, right, and they won't let him go, won't release him. Another individual, of course, is Rochelle McGee. Rochelle McGee is the oldest political person that we have in the United States today, right, and he was involved in the 1970 insurrection, August 1910 insurrection with Jonathan Jackson, George's younger brother, at the Bruin County Courthouse, right? He was found not guilty of shooting and even involved in that incident. Not guilty by the court. The court would not accept that decision from the juror. Would not accept it, right? He's still in prison today, right? Mumia Abdul-Jamal. We know that he did not commit the crime for which he was committed. He's known around the world as a profound intellect, right, inside prison and outside of prison, right? They know he was innocent for what he did. They won't let him out of prison. We've had comrades who died in prison on their deathbed, and they won't release him for compassionate release, so they'll be dying at home, right, because of their politics. One particularly, Mutulu Shakur, right, the stepfather of the great rapper Tupac Shakur, right? He's terminally ill today, right? He asked for compassionate release several times, and they denied him. Or probably martial law, he's going to die in prison. Okay, this is how they treat us, political prisoners and prisoners of war.
Oh, really appreciate you being with us here at Hidden Files, Mr. Jalil Motaki. Now, let's take a closer look at some of the political prisoners that were mentioned by our guest.
Assata Shakur. She is the step-aunt and godmother of late rapper Tupac Shakur and the sister of political prisoner Dr. Mutulu Shakur. She is 75 years old. Under U.S. President Obama's term, not only was she not pardoned, but the bail on her head increased from $1 million to $2 million. Dr. Mutulu Shakur. He is a doctor who specializes in acupuncture. He was very effective in helping people get off of drugs using his method. He was a black liberation activist. He's also the stepfather of rapper Tupac Shakur. He was charged and convicted for helping his sister Asata escape prison. He was eligible for parole in 2016, and despite being a model prisoner, his release has been denied. Currently, he's suffering from stage 3 bone marrow cancer, and he is 71 years old. There have been many requests made for him to be released on humanitarian reasons, but they all have been denied. Rochelle Sink McGee. Rochelle is the oldest political prisoner in the United States. He's 83 years old. He has only lived 16 years outside of prisons. The rest of his life he has spent behind bars. From the beginning, he was convicted of trumped-up charges based on racism. He says slavery 400 years ago and slavery today is the same, just with a new name. Momia Abu Jamal. Momia Abu Jamal is an internationally recognized journalist and black liberation activist. He was one of the founding members of the Philadelphia chapter of Black Panthers, and he has been known as the voice of the voiceless for his many years spent writing about issues relating to working class people of color, prisoners, and the underrepresented. He has written 8 books and countless articles and commentaries from a prison cell on death row in Pennsylvania. He has been incarcerated since 1981. He's 68 years old and suffering from various diseases. Imam Jamil al-Amin. Formerly known as H-Rap Brown, he served as Minister of Justice with the Black Panthers. He is a well-known Muslim leader now and has been in prison since 2000. He remains in jail despite another man admitting to killing the person al-Amin was accused of killing.
Over the years, there have been many political prisoners to die in prison or to be released and to die within days of their release in the United States. There are petitions and movements around the world asking for compassionate releases for these aging revolutionaries. Well, we will continue to follow it up right here and let you know about their latest situation. But for now, I'd like to leave you with this quote from journalist and political prisoner Momia Abu Jamal. Conventional wisdom would have one believe that it is insane to resist this, the mightiest of empires. But what history really shows is that today's empire is tomorrow's ashes, that nothing lasts forever, and that to not resist is to acquiesce in your own oppression. Well, the greatest form of sanity that anyone can exercise is to resist that force that is trying to repress, oppress, and fight down the human spirit. Until next time, we hope that we hear from you. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and this is Hidden Files.
Take pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. And one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. We'll be right back. IRIB English Radio.
Muslims and the leftists.
Part 4.
Profit is more important than anything. In order to achieve profit, you destroy everything around you. You ruin people's lives. You destroy nature. Human beings are moving away from humanity every day. That should come to an end, because this theft, this wealth they're accumulating is beyond their needs. There are families whose wealth is more than that of a country. Most of them do not produce anything. They're brokers. It means they take something from you and then sell it when its price goes up. I don't produce it, I store it. And then I tell you, it should be competitive, you need to lower the price. No, no, son. We need to let everything run its course, then everyone will get their share. If you build a dam and hold the water, everyone will be left thirsty. But if you have a dam and let the water flow into a creek, everyone will be able to drink that water. Yes, that's how it is. Water is a metaphor, though it's not really metaphorical. Because one of these days, they'll privatize water as well. You'll see, they'd be telling us, you don't really need a lot of water.
I think this situation is very bad. I don't know. I'm not a political expert, but I believe there are no short-term solutions. You want to know my opinion about the fact that banks confiscate people's houses? Well, in my opinion, they have no shame. Is it so hard for the parliament to approve non-recourse loans? Well, political parties need to come to an agreement on that, right? That's a rule, right? Can we have any expectations? No?
Podemos esperar algo. Absolutamente nada.
This is forbidden for us because it means living or earning one's living through other people's needs. When a person is in need and asks someone else to help him, and that person tries to take advantage of the situation and serve his own interests, this is immoral. Suppose someone throws you out of your house. That is contrary to Islam.
De frente y claramente, ¿no?
Este tipo de pintadas nos hacen.
Such things change our view of the world. Needs should not become means of trade. This happens not only in Cordoba and other Spanish cities, but also all over the world. This is not something that needs to be painted.
Lo que no debería hacer falta que estuviera pintado.
Una crisis motivada por el Partido Popular, no.
Has the People's Party created this crisis? No. Has the Spanish Socialist Workers' Party created this crisis? No. The people of Spain have brought this crisis upon themselves. People take part in elections every 4 years and vote in favor of one party, but they don't participate actively in politics to solve the problems of villages or cities, and then provinces, autonomous states and countries. And finally, the European Union and the United Nations.
El primer paso no lo hacemos, y el segundo lo hacemos mal. Y si votamos a un político local que no nos funciona, pero votamos porque tiene unas siglas.
This should happen step by step. If we don't take the first step and take a sloppy second step and vote for a local politician who will do us no good just because we like him, voting for politicians like Mr. Barcenas will become a general rule. He is accused of fraud and embezzlement. He is a senator in Cantabria who has gotten the highest number of votes in the parliamentary elections for two terms, while he's neither from Cantabria nor ever lived there. In many cases, people vote for a candidate they do not know just because they belong to a political party. That person is chosen to do as he pleases for 4 years. The result is that you see now crisis everywhere. The economy, ethics, families. That is the problem of us Spaniards. It is not something that has been imposed on us.
Es problema nuestro, de los españoles. No es una cosa que nos hayan impuesto. Es una cosa que nos hemos puesto.
With the so-called discovery of America and the development of capitalism, we suddenly entered an era of madness and insanity. It certainly reached its culmination in the 20th century. Dictatorial movements, right? I'm talking about Soviet communism and fascism, Zionism, the fruits of this and other centuries. Radical liberalism. Humanity has stepped into an irrational path. The situation is so bad, it's frightening.
Es algo que pone los pelos de punta, ¿no?
El resultado natural.
Naturally, the result would be a disaster. Of course, we have to be optimistic. We have no other choice. Something's going to come out of this crisis. Who knows? Either a worse crisis or a positive thing.
Más caos, algo mucho peor, o puede ser algo positivo.
Hombre, yo veo el futuro muy mal, absolutamente muy mal, ¿no?
I think a terrible future awaits us. Very bad, right? So bad that even the human species may disappear from the earth. I have no doubt about it. Perhaps all religions share the same opinion. We need to stop this catastrophe, which is an everyday tragedy. You don't need to think about the Greek islands. We see it every day, every morning we wake up.
No hay que irse a pensar a calenda griega. Lo vemos cada día, ¿no? Cada mañana, ¿no? Cuando nos levantamos.
Unos principios bien llevados.
A set of moral principles can save us from this financial crisis, but in order to do that, there is no need for the humankind to return to its human principles. That will get us nowhere. The fact that we humans are constantly looking at numbers and figures, working and earning money, because each human being has a different way of life.
Más de una.
Hombre, a mí lo primero que se me ocurre es irme del país.
The first thing that comes to my mind is to leave this country. Maybe I'll find relief then. But my age doesn't let me be adventurous. What am I supposed to do? Well, I cooperate with special organizations, with grassroots organizations, adult or youth organizations, or NGOs, helping them as a lawyer. I do everything I can for them. If necessary, I devote 2 or 3 hours a day to them. Of course, we can't change the system this way, but it's all right if I can solve the problems of a couple of families.
Solucionar un problema a dos familias, pues algo es algo.
Lo que está pasando es culpa nuestra.
We are to be blamed for these events, and we can solve these problems. We can remedy this situation. We shouldn't put up our hands and give up. Say this is how it's supposed to be, and we need to live with it. No, we can set things right. That is Prophet Muhammad's message. I'm talking about the situation here. I'm not saying that it would have been great if we thought everything was going to be all right. Yes, everything can be all right. Everything can be perfect, but only if you have a conscience.
El
The government tries to keep people in ignorance of politics, to put them to sleep, to suppress any protest or criticisms. They always try to sell you this Disney idea that tomorrow will be a better day, and they try to welcome you to the future you always dreamed of. It's a big lie, and we must fight it, but in different ways. Small movements are very precious. I think that is Prophet Muhammad's message, the message of hope. Prophets used to arise when the situation was very bad, very sensitive. It is no coincidence that religion is intertwined with the history of mankind. I believe that religion reflects the highest needs of humans in this world, and religion is an encouraging tool, a way of life in harsh and horrible conditions, like the majority of people's situation. I believe religion plays an important role in the society of humans. Let me explain it in a different way that is not very scientific, okay? There are neighborhoods in the city of Lima in which life is very difficult if you don't believe in God.
Lo voy a decir de una manera menos científica, ¿no? Hay barrios de Lima que es muy difícil poder seguir viviendo allí si uno no cree en Dios.
We must continue to struggle. It's an internal struggle within ourselves to try to be fair to others. If we don't treat others fairly, the society will not move in the right direction. We should try to be good to others and avoid bad deeds. Will we succeed? I don't know.
¿Lo conseguimos? No lo sé.
Pues el futuro tiene que pasar por recuperar otra vez la cordura.
The restoration of our common sense has been destroyed. Now we are required more than ever to reflect on which are the means we should return to the source. We should sit ourselves the usual questions. There are three or four questions. Who am I? What is this? What am I doing here? There are three questions. I think we shall start talking again afterwards.
Yo creo que vamos a estar otra vez hablando, empezando a hablar, ¿no?
Yo. Soy de lo que llaman la izquierda.
I'm one of those people who are called leftists. I am a proponent of social justice, family justice, justice with a capital J, if that is leftism. Then yes, I am a leftist. If that is rightism, yes, I'm a rightist. If it is moderation, then I'm a moderate. But I think justice is beyond any party.
When I was 20 years old, I dreamed of changing the world. But now, at this age, I hope the world doesn't change me.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. President Raisi allows Iran's successful satellite launch into orbit as yet another indication that sanctions cannot stop the country's progress. Nagorno-Karabakh's breakaway government announces its dissolution as over half of the enclave's population moved to